Hot.
Gorgeous, right?
H-O-T. Gorge. Straight gorgy. We were just talking about getting our video lined up because this is the first podcast ever. This is episode one. Welcome to Redo Love.
A name we just came up with.
We literally, in the last 5 seconds, just decided that was the name of the podcast. And here we are. That's how you know this is going to be great.
After debating for hours in the car.
Welcome to episode one. I guess we should start with an introduction.
Probably.
Introductions. Would you like to go first?
Sure. I'm Flora Ong, the creator of Redo.Love. I'm a matchmaker and dating coach, and I'm excited to be here, Aaron.
I'm excited to be here too. My name's Aaron Goff, creative director, writer, producer, and I guess editor now as well. We can add that to the list of things that I do in my day job. And also,
wait, I didn't know we were listing everything we've ever done in our lives. Hold on.
No, I'm talking about everything I do now. So if you want to go back to everything we've ever done, I mean, we could include a lot of things on that, but this podcast, the reason we're doing this is a few things, right? There are a lot of experiences that both of us have had in the world of dating before marriage, maybe during marriage, after a marriage. And there are a few things that we've learned, discovered along the way about how love needs to be redone, right?
True. And I think it's important to kind of note that, like, people that get divorced tend to have similar experiences post-divorce, especially with this new world of app dating that we're all living in. So I think there's a lot of commonality for us, especially we both have children. We both were married for like 10 plus years. But I also think that a lot of people that get divorced go through a similar pattern of behavior. So there's that. And then there's just app dating in general, which is crazy, no matter whether you've been married or divorced or not. So,
yeah, the apps are really interesting. For both of us, the timing went that we each of us were married when the apps came out, like when Tinder first came out. That was in 2011,
yeah.
Like somewhere around then. Uh-huh. And I remember having friends who I worked with, you know, with this app, and you could just see pictures of people and swipe and then start talking and then like date or even just hook up. And I was like, what is this?
How jealous were you?
I'm not going to lie. Jealous. I was like, what? I kind of wished that, you know, yeah, back in the day we had something like that.
Yeah,
so
me too.
It was interesting to, I think, for both of us to be married when apps came out and then to be.
But not married to each other, let's clarify.
Right. No. And anyway, yeah. So we'll definitely get into app dating versus not app dating, because we've both had experiences with both and not to compare the two, but just to talk about the differences. But we'll get into a lot of topics over this podcast. App dating, we're going to get into things like attachment theory, some of the psychology and some of the really fascinating science coming up about that. What are some of the other things that we're going to talk about? Dating coach and matchmaker.
Well, hopefully, you know, we'll get into all topics around dating and relationships and what keeps us stuck. Today, I think we wanted to cover attachment, maybe specifically anxious attachment. But I think we'll talk about attachment in general because it's kind of the new science behind relationship. And not only is it the new science, but I think it opens up a lot of information as to why we do the things we do or we act in the ways that we act that we would never have realized without this information. It's really mind-blowing. I know it blew your mind when you discovered it. definitely not only blew my mind, but changed my life really. And has me here today, quite frankly, literally why I'm here today.
Yeah, it's really interesting because a lot of the things that you learn about attachment style apply outside of even dating, just kind of why your brain does the things it does and why you think the way you think. And when your partner, your significant other does something, and how you react to it, how you interpret what they're doing, and how you think about them and how you think about yourself. It's really fascinating. A lot of it comes down to your attachment style, and it's something you learned before you were dating when you were a child. So yeah, I'm excited to get into that. And we'll of course be covering things like what dating is like when you're divorced and when you're a parent, because it's kind of weird sometimes. And so we've got some stories. We've got lots of stories, and some anecdotes, some do's, some don'ts, and some never agains. So, yeah, are we ready to jump in?
Yeah, let's do it.
Let's do it. You're in San Francisco, I am in Utah, and
beautiful place that Utah.
Beautiful place, Utah. We to kick this off, we went to Arches National Park. That was just last weekend.
That was last weekend.
Today's September 6th, Sunday, September 6th. And Arches was where we kind of didn't hatch the idea for this, but...
But really we borrowed it.
Right. we kind of laid out the plan for the podcast and for the Redo Love brand, and I'm excited to see it come to life, to make this happen.
Yeah, me too.
So let's do it.
Do we want to tell the people how we met?
I feel like we should now. I feel like we've teased it so much, and it's almost like, wait a second, how did this happen? If we're, you know, three states apart, how? You want to go ahead?
Sure. We matched on an app. I think we matched more than once, right?
We did. It was on Tinder.
On Tinder.
Originally.
Thank God.
Originally in 2018.
Oh, he's got dates.
And I remember that. It was towards the end of the year of 2018. We matched. And then you ghosted me.
I did? I think I even had the text on that. I think when I read back, when we rematched, I read back and I was like, oops, that was me.
You absolutely did. But it's okay because I started seeing someone, which is where we'll have plenty of stories of that relationship, which took up basically my entire year, my entire 2019. And then we rematched again at the beginning of this year, the beginning of 2020.
Completely blows my mind because I feel like I've known you much longer than that. And this all happened pre-COVID.
That's true. And so we matched again and instantly we remembered each other, right? Because we kind of got into it right away. It's like, oh, hey. and then we went on a date. And we went.
Best date ever, by the way.
It was really fun.
Please tell everyone what you suggested.
Yes, it was my idea. And I own up to this 1,000%. So this must have been, I think it must have been in February, because for our very first rendezvous date, I suggested that we go to a wine bar to watch The Bachelor. It was a Monday night. Obviously it was a Monday because The Bachelor's on, right? On Mondays. And it was, I don't remember if it was the first episode of the new season.
No, it was not.
Season.
It was not the first episode. It was a few episodes in, yeah.
So this place is called Wine Down in San Francisco. There's a plug for Wine Down. Maybe we can get them as a sponsor.
Maybe, if they're still open.
Oh yeah, true. But it's basically the female equivalent of a sports bar. So there's a TV behind the bar everyone goes and instead of drinking like IPAs, everyone drinks wine, but still gets wasted watching TV and yells and screams at
The Bachelor,
at The Bachelor instead of at like athletes playing sports. We cringe and we yelp and scream at Bachelor contestants.
Best date idea ever. Men, yeah. Take notes.
Yeah, it's solid. It's a winner.
Yeah.
So that is how, that is the beginning of this tale now. This
torrid love affair.
Nearly 2 years in the making. Think about that.
Kinda, yeah. Yeah. Wow. Now, so you started earlier talking about all of this attachment stuff, right? Because I think we want to talk about attachment first, kind of lay the groundwork.
Right.
For why we are the way we are in our relationships overall and in general. And you started talking about this happening in childhood, and it does happen in childhood. Believe it or not, it even happens in the womb. Okay.
Really?
So, yeah. There's epigenetics. There's a lot of studies now in epigenetics that attachment style is created in the womb, so that if your mom is stressed or has issue, you know, has a high level of cortisol that flushes through the placenta while your brain is forming, it dictates your attachment style. And they've even been able to trace that through adulthood. So they can tell you kind of based on your mother's level of cortisol and based on your mom's stress levels, whether you'll have a specific type of attachment style and then dictate that through the rest. And that dictates your attachment style through adulthood.
So what you're saying is you really have no choice.
Well, yes and no, because say your mom is stressed, but then you're born and then she's not stressed, and then she can reinforce proper attachment through she or your father or whoever your caretaker is can reinforce proper attachment. You won't necessarily keep that attachment style, because the good news about attachment styles is that they can change.
Interesting. So you know what I'm curious to know, and I think a lot of people would be interested at this point, is as a dating coach and as a matchmaker, do you talk about attachment style with your clients?
Yes, absolutely. 100%. It's one of the first in matchmaking. It's a little bit different, right? Because people come to you for, to be set up on dates, basically, right? They're not necessarily coming to you for coaching. If they're open to coaching, the conversation will definitely come up. But as a dating coach, yeah, it's one of the first parts of my program, kind of getting down to the root of your attachment style and seeing and understanding how that plays out.
That's really interesting. Like, do you ever try to match people or not match people based on their attachment styles?
No, not only, it's something I suggested actually to the company that I worked for, but it takes a minute to get into that conversation. It takes a certain amount of openness to get into that conversation. And when I'm matching people, the process of matching through matchmaking, it's, like I said, it's kind of a little bit more surface than that. It's really just trying to get people on dates. It's only if and when the person's open to conversation and open to a bit of coaching that these topics come up.
Interesting. You know, at this point, I'm just realizing we haven't labeled any of the attachment styles. We're talking about attachment theory and a different style. So maybe we should pause here and step back a little bit. And can you go over the attachment styles? There's four of them, right? I mean, there's three main ones and one kind of minor one.
Right.
One minor, I should say. And then give like a brief definition of what each of them are.
Okay. So I like to talk about this from basically where attachment theory kind of started and came from. Okay. And I think a lot of people relate to it because it takes them out of kind of their adult life, right? So there's a test called the Strange Test. You can look this up online. It's a very huge psychological study. And it was done on kids that were about a year and a half. They would come into a room with their moms, or their caretaker, their moms really. And there would be another adult in the room, and their mom would leave the room. So secure attachers, which is 50% of the population, they would go in with the mom. Mom would leave the room. Baby would cry a little bit, see that there's another adult there, understand that they're safe and comfortable, and go and play with the toys in the room. Mom would come back in the room. They'd see mom. Yay, mom's here. Come hug and kiss mom. Go back and play. Okay, that's secure attachers. That's about 50% of the population. Then there were the kids that would come in with mom. Mom would leave. They'd be hysterical that mom left. They would cry. They would be clingy. They didn't want mom to leave. Mom would leave the room. They would be, you know, kind of uncomfortable, maybe sit in a corner, maybe, you know, try and cling to the other adult in the room. Mom would come back in the room. They would cling back to mom and, you know, be completely attached to mom. That's about 25% of the 20 to 23% of the population, let's say. Those are anxious attachers. Then there were the kids that came into the room with mom, didn't care. Once the mom put them down, they never turned around to see mom again. Mom would leave the room. Mom would come back into the room. The baby never turned around, never really even cared that mom was there or not. Those are avoidant attachers. And that is, again, about 20 to 23% of the population. Then the smaller percent is disorganized. And those are kids that are both anxious and avoidant at the same time.
Double whammy. Wow.
So what's interesting overall is that the secure attachers are great, right? Well, there's a couple of things. So firstly, they studied these kids 30 years later, and 30 years later, they realized that they had similar attachment styles in their adult relationships.
That's amazing. That's the most mind-blowing thing, I think.
Right.
That's crazy.
Right. And it is mind-blowing. And we'll get into that and why that happens, actually.
Yeah.
So secure attachers 30 years later are your people who get into relationships. They have a natural understanding that they have a responsibility towards their partners. They are great with everybody, meaning every attachment style is best with a secure partner, because they understand that if they're with an avoidant who has issues with emotional connection, they can give them space. They're secure enough to give them space. And with an anxious attacher, they understand their need for more attention, or they know that they need to appreciate them a little bit more, or call them a little bit extra, or whatever it is that the anxious attacher requires. What's fascinating to me is that the anxious attacher, I'm not going to talk so much about the anxious avoidant, but they fit, you know, they fit both categories just because mm-hmm. they're a smaller percentage. But the anxious and the avoidant both have insecure attachment, basically. They just have different coping mechanisms for insecure attachment. So one learns that in order to get love, they needed to cling and beg for it. And the other learned that they needed to shut down their emotions in order to survive.
Interesting. So both the anxious attachment style and the avoidant attachment style are forms of an internal insecurity. They just manifest themselves in completely opposite ways, really.
Exactly. And they both have the same problem, essentially. Essentially, at the core of all of this is abandonment issues.
You know, I want to take a minute to possibly reframe that a little, because when I started learning about this stuff, and maybe we'll have time to get into this today, and I learned which attachment style I was, I started looking at it because I thought maybe before I had a problem, or that I was the quote unquote problem, But the more I learned about it, the more I realized, you know, this is, it's not like I'm doing it wrong. It's just the way it is. I mean,
it's the way that you were built and the way that you coped in order to get love as a kid. Yeah.
Right. And so
it's just a survival mechanism, really.
Yeah. So I think we want to be careful to not say that, I mean, tell me if you disagree, but I think we want to watch out to make sure that we don't call it a problem, or that if you have an anxious attachment style or an avoidant, you're not a problem, or you're not doing it wrong. And it's not like the goal is to become secure.
No, it is.
Is it?
The goal is to become secure.
It is. So what you're saying is that if you are anxious or avoidant, you're doing it wrong and you should change.
It's not about doing it wrong. It's about, so, you know, you just talked about your attachment style. Do you want to tell everybody what it is?
Yeah. So I identified as, well, I shouldn't say identify because that's
wrong connotation.
Yeah. I took the test. There was a test. I mean, there's a lot of tests you can take, but the book I got, which I think is the definitive book on it,
Attached,
about attachment theory. I took the test and I was overwhelmingly an anxious attachment style. I have a theory
though about why.
Ooh, okay. Well, we can save that, but I know there was a test where there's basically two tests in the book, and you can take one test that's like a self-assessment. And then there's a second test where you can do it with your partner.
Right.
And they can give you a score as well. So on both the self-assessment and the partner assessment, I was pretty strongly leaning towards the anxious attachment style. On the partner test, I think maybe it was out of like 35 points, and I got like a 34. So I was like undoubtedly scored in the anxious type. So that's where I'm at. I just looked it up here. So yeah, it's called Attached, The New Science of Adult Attachment and How It Can Help You Find and Keep Love by Amir Levine and Rachel Heller. So
yeah,
fascinating book. I listened to the audio book. There's like a companion PDF and stuff. Either way, really, really interesting stuff. So that's my style. Flora, what is yours?
I'm anxious too.
Oh,
and you know, I didn't need to take the test for it to tell me that. I read the first 2-3 chapters and I was like, oh my God, this is me, you know? Yeah. So where were we? Oh, you were saying, that it's wrong or bad. It is definitely not wrong or bad. It's a survival mechanism that we developed. It's a coping mechanism that we developed. Is it in your benefit to move towards secure attachment? Yes, because who wants to be anxiously attached? That's not fun. You know, it's not comfortable. It's not relaxing. It's not enjoyable. So you do want to move towards secure attachment. And the interesting thing about avoidant attachment is that avoidants tend to be loners, emotional loners, not necessarily, you know, loners in life, but they tend to be emotional loners, and they tend to be a little bit narcissistic. They think they know best. They think, you know, the way that they live life is right. So they don't seek out to fix their problem always. They may seek it out kind of later in life or at some point when they realize that they're alone or they're going to be alone forever, but they tend to not, avoidants don't tend to seek out the help, but anxious tend to seek out the help and the understanding because it's a problem, right? Being anxious is not a sustainable way of being for too long.
That's interesting. So that's what you're saying is that if you are either an anxious or an avoidant attachment style. You didn't do anything wrong, but it's ideal, and probably you'll have a more successful dating life and more successful relationships if you move towards having the characteristics of the secure attachment style, right?
Yes.
Okay. And I know you want to talk about some of the hows and whys behind that.
Well, basically when you're born, you're right brained only, right? Your left brain doesn't start developing until language comes in, when you start kind of speaking and learning language. So everything that's happening to you between the ages of like 1 and 2 are completely right brained. And your right brain's main function is to keep you safe and secure, so that, you know, when you see somebody coming towards you, right, that's why babies cry when it's not their mom or, you know, somebody that they're comfortable with. They cry because that's their only way of expressing themselves. So everything that we learn from our caretakers and every coping mechanism that we develop is a result of how we were raised between the ages of 1 and 2. So if we lived in a house where there, and we had caretakers that were secure with us, that were loving, that were attuned to our needs, that were responsive, you know, when we cried, that left us with a feeling of safety and security, we will seek out the same subconsciously from our right brain as adults. However, if we grew up in environments that were where we had inconsistent care, maybe, you know, our parents were depressed, maybe, you know, and sometimes they had the energy to, and sometimes they didn't have the energy to pay attention to you. Maybe in my case, for example, my parents were immigrants, right? So they weren't home all the time. They were loving, wonderful parents, but they just had to work all the time.
Yeah.
And it created a situation where I got attention sometimes. And that attention was exciting. So
because it was inconsistent. So when it did happen, it was like, oh.
It was exciting. So when I seek out love in my life, not today because I'm a little better, but up until these days, you know, I sought excitement and I sought people who created excitement, and it didn't matter whether they provided that safety, because the excitement is what got me, you know, got me interested.
It gave you some validation that you were used to getting it that way.
It was a familiarity with how I was raised, you know?
Yeah.
And so specifically, you know, again, anxious attachment has a lot to do with irregular attention.
Mm.
So the basis of anxious attachment is generally irregular attention from a caregiver, so that you sometimes would receive it and sometimes you wouldn't receive it when you needed it. And so it activates the sense of excitement when you do get it. So if you find yourself as an adult where you only get excited by, and also the chasing of it, right? Because as an anxious attacher, you always needed to chase it in order for it to happen. You needed, mommy, please stay home. Mommy, please don't go to work. Mommy, you know, come home early, or, you know, or mommy, play with me, or whatever, you know, daddy, whatever the situation was. Your coping mechanism is also chasing. So you find excitement in the chase as much as excitement in the lack of attention, the little bits of attention, then the lack of attention.
So interesting. All right. Well, we're going to dive much deeper into this. We're actually going to do an episode on each of the three major attachment styles. Is there anything else as a general overview that you think would be helpful to cover today before we wrap up?
I think that, you know, for me, one of the other parts of this that was like the biggest thing to learn, which I kind of went over, was the kinds of the systems of the right brain and left brain, where the right brain is your feeling subconscious brain, and it holds memory. It holds every, it has imprinted every single thing that has ever happened to you, that has been of any kind of emotional dysregulation. So, but it also has no timeline, right? So anything that happened 30 years ago has the same emotional charge as it happening today. So that's why sometimes I'm personally very reactive.
Okay.
And that reactivity is something from way back when, you know?
Interesting.
It is very interesting. And then the left brain, which is where people think, well, first of all, it's where you think from. It's where language is developed. It's where we make all of our cognitive decisions. But this is the brain that people think they're making decisions from, when in reality, you're making decisions from your right brain and your feeling brain. So you know how you're always like, I just had this gut feeling. Or, yeah. Oh, I saw her and I just knew right then and there.
My intuition told me. Yeah.
Right. This is all actually your right brain and memory at play.
That's informed by how you grew up, the availability of your caretakers, the attention that they gave you, and if they were available sometimes or regularly, and all of that comes into play to inform what your right brain, or how your right brain interprets your relationships.
Yeah. And, you know, and this goes far beyond just, you know, love relationships. This goes like into how you make decisions in life. This goes into what careers you, I mean, you know, there's other things that play obviously, but goes into the careers that you choose, the general, you know, the way that you are with your own kids. I mean, it goes on and on, because this is just how our brains are, but it does feature a lot with attachment stuff, because that's where all of this is, your right brain specifically is where all of the attachment stuff is stored.
Well, we're calling this the Redo Love podcast. So we'll stay away from redoing work and family and all of that for now, but we're going to focus primarily, all that's fascinating, on relationships and how to find someone, how to keep someone, what not to do, what to do. We're going to have some stories about that, and I'm excited to get into it. So let's wrap up. This was episode one of the Redo Love podcast with Flora and Aaron. You're the star of the show here. Let's face it. Like I'm only the Robin to your Batman. You are the matchmaker and the relationship.
Can you put a dating coach Batman like thing behind me?
Yeah, let's find a Bat Cave Zoom background for next time. That'll be great. And should I wear like red tights and like some yellow boots like Robin?
Every single time.
All right. Well, thanks for listening. Although probably no one's going to listen to this because. We're just launching this right now, but maybe someday when you become famous, someone will go back years from now and listen to episode one. So whoever you are, thank you.
In the future you.
In future you, whenever you're listening to this, in the archives at the Library of Congress, I'm sure. Hopefully this was helpful and this was interesting stuff. So with that, Let's sign off,
man.
And we'll be back for episode two.